What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Jonathan Jones reporting. Clashes between Palestinian protesters and Israeli troops erupted Thursday in the West Bank and Gaza on the day after President Trump recognized Jerusalem as the Israeli capital. Correspondent Robert Berger reports.
Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital has sparked anger across the Arab and Muslim world because the city is home to the Mosque of Al-Aqsa, the third holiest place in Islam. Palestinians see East Jerusalem as the capital of a future state. But for Israel, the Al-Aqsa compound is known as the Temple Mount, the site of the two biblical temples and the holiest place in Judaism. Palestinian officials say President Trump has disqualified himself as an honest broker in the peace process and warn that his decision could lead to regional violence, extremism, and instability. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The U.S. State Department has issued a, quote, worldwide caution warning after the decision. U.S. government facilities, it said, worldwide will remain in a statened height of alert. Those facilities may temporarily close or periodically suspend public services to assess their security posture. The warning also urged American citizens to be aware of local developments and remain in contact with U.S. embassies or consulates. It said as terrorist attacks, political upheaval, and violence often take place without any warning, American citizens are strongly encouraged to maintain a high level of vigilance and take appropriate steps to increase their security awareness when traveling. This is VOA News. The trial of a Kurdish opposition party leader has started in Ankara. He's charged with terrorism and has been held for more than a year in pretrial detention. The case, as correspondent Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, is drawing growing international criticism.
Supporters of the jailed Kurdish leader Selahattin Demirtas gathered outside Ankara's Sincan prison, where the Kurdish leader's trial began Thursday. In a 500-page indictment, Demirtas is accused of leading a terrorist organization, spreading terrorist propaganda, and inciting hate and crime. Controversy surrounds the case over the decision to hold the trial in a prison and to allocate a courtroom that allows only 20 people to watch. Demirtas is widely seen as one of the most charismatic and effective political opponents to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
A federal judge sentenced a white former police officer in the southern American state of South Carolina to 20 years in prison Thursday for the 2015 killing of an unarmed black man. The shooting enraged African Americans across the country. Michael Slager is one of the few police officers to be sentenced to prison for such a killing. Prosecutors dropped state murder charges against him in exchange for his pleading guilty to violating Walter Scott's civil rights. But ruling for the federal government, Judge David Norton said Slager committed second-degree murder and tried to obstruct justice by attempting to lie about the shooting, and he sentenced him to 20 years in prison. A federal judge in Michigan, a state in the upper Midwest of America, has sentenced former Olympics girls gymnastics coach Larry Nassar to 60 years in prison for possessing thousands of images of child pornography. Thursday's sentence means Nassar, who is also awaiting sentencing for sexually assaulting young girls, will likely never walk free again. The judge said Nassar has demonstrated that he should never again have access to children. Investigators discovered his child porn collection during their investigation into the sex assault charges. Nassar was the USA Gymnastics team doctor, as well as the doctor for the Michigan State University gymnastics team and an MSU professor. In a letter to the judge, an Olympic gold medal-winning gymnast called Nassar a monster. There's more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world around the clock at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Jonathan Jones reporting from the world headquarters of the Voice of America in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, December the 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Supreme Court denies an appeal for a rerun of the October 10th election and lifts the ban for a runoff election to take place.
Wherefore, and in view of the foregoing, it is the considered opinion of this court that the ruling of the NEC's Board of Commissioners declaring a runoff election is hereby affirmed, that the stay order issued on November 6, 2017 is hereby lifted.
That's Associate Justice Philip Banks of the Liberian Supreme Court. We'll have reactions from the appellants as well as analysis of Thursday's court ruling. Kenya's main opposition says the swearing-in of Raila Odinga will take place as scheduled next Tuesday, despite warnings from the government. And an official says sexual abuse undermines the integrity of the United Nations.
It is a conduct which is absolutely abhorrent and a conduct which is extraordinarily painful to its victims and undermines the United Nations itself.
Jane Connors is the UN Assistant Secretary General Victims' Rights Advocate. And Mauritania drafted a law that would sentence people to death if found guilty of mocking the Prophet Muhammad or the Quran. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Supreme Court on Thursday denied an appeal for a rerun of the October 10th presidential and parliamentary election and lifted the ban for a runoff election to take place. The court said the appellants, four political parties, including the ruling Unity Party, did not provide enough evidence to substantiate their claims that there were massive irregularities. It agreed with the National Elections Commission, or NEG, that while there might have been some errors, they were not nationwide. Here is Associate Justice Philip Banks with a majority opinion.
A review of the records revealed two important points. A, that indeed and in fact, there were elections violations and irregularities by persons employed by the NEC to participate in the conduct of the October 10th presidential and representative elections, and B, that although there were violations, they were not shown to be so overwhelming as to enable us to draw the conclusion that the results would have been different had the violations and irregularities not occurred. Had the evidence been presented, we would have had the opportunity to make that kind of decision. We do not say here that the violations and irregularities were not of the magnitude alleged by the appellants, or that they may not have been of the magnitude alleged. If there were, could have been. All we say, however, is that the first and second appellants did not produce the evidence in such magnitude as to lead to the conclusion that violations and irregularities were so widespread or was of such a nature that they permeated the entire election spectrum. But wherefore, and in view of the foregoing, it is the considered opinion of this court that the ruling of the NEC's Board of Commissioners declaring a runoff election is hereby affirmed.
The National Elections Commission is required to maintain an accurate final registration roll, or the FRR, at each polling center of those registered to vote at that center. But the complainants argued that the commission did not maintain such lists, giving rise to many voters being denied to vote because their names were not listed in the final registration roll. The court ordered the commission to clean up the registration roll before the runoff.
That the NEC is mandated and ordered to fully comply with the standards of publication of the FRR as discussed herein. Two, that the NEC is mandated to conduct a full cleanup of the FRR to ensure that multiple names of identification numbers are removed therefrom. Three, that the FRR be made available in published hard copies to all elections magistrates and polling places across the country in accordance with law, prior to any runoff elections being held. Four, that given the fact that the FRR is the only electoral document that speaks to the eligibility of voters, the NEC is hereby prohibited from permitting anyone whose name is not found on the FRR to vote. And lastly, that the stay order issued on November 6, 2017, growing out of the writ of prohibition filed by the first appellant LP, that is Liberty Party, against the NEC is hereby lifted, and the NEC is ordered to proceed with the scheduling of the runoff elections in accordance with the Constitution and the new elections law, and in strict conformity with the prescriptions set forth in this opinion.
That's Associate Justice Philip Banks of the Liberian Supreme Court. Charles Bromskin, presidential candidate of the Liberty Party, which filed the original election challenge, said he was disappointed in the court ruling.
We are disappointed in the ruling of the Supreme Court, which, among other things, had violated the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution of Liberia. They have violated our equal protection rights, as provided in Article 11C of the Constitution. The court ordered the correction of some of the things that we complain of that made the electoral process unconstitutional and unlawful. Those things that contributed to massive fraud and pervasive irregularities as condition for the runoff, but failed, the court failed to similarly ensure equal protection for the other 18 political parties that participated in the first round of the election under the same conditions.
Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling Unity Party, which also was part of the election complaint, said his party welcomes the court decision. He hopes the legal challenge would brighten the future for Liberia's democracy.
We would therefore like to state without equivocation that the Unity Party accepts the ruling of the High Court. This decision and the road we took with the collaboration partners are unprecedented, and some gave all of us the hope that the future of our democracy and the country is bright. Liberians can now celebrate the triumph of the rule of law. Liberians can now celebrate their resolve to pursue the non-violent means of solving problems.
That's incumbent Liberian Vice President Joseph Boakai, who is also presidential candidate of the ruling Unity Party. Rodney Sie is the managing editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print news magazine. He says first on the list of the Elections Commission before scheduling the runoff election is to fulfill the court order to clean up the voter list.
Well, as you know, we reported in our edition that ECOWAS has sent a team of experts in Liberia to look into the allegations of what happened during the voter roll issue. And they came up with a laundry list of recommendations and cautions for the Election Commission. For example, the much-disputed addendum list that was used in the first elections, they've recommended that that be squashed away, and I think the Supreme Court also reiterated that issue. Because what happened is, if you went to a voting place and your name was not on the ballot, the poll workers will put your name on a piece of paper and allow you to vote. They said that that was not a good thing to do, and I think that's one of the issues that has been addressed in this ruling.
I know that Mr. Bromskin, the leader of the Liberty Party, who filed the original complaint against the results, has come out to say that he's disappointed with the Supreme Court ruling. Any reaction from any of the other three parties?
Well, we did have a much calmer reaction from another opposition party, the Alternative National Congress. They've come out to say that they welcome the Supreme Court ruling, but they will not be endorsing any of the candidates in the runoff.
Do you have any idea, or do Liberians have any idea, when the Elections Commission will schedule the runoff?
Well, the Elections Commission has to report back to the Supreme Court to say that they have cleaned up the voter roll. The date we're hearing for that is before the 19th of December, because some have put the runoff to that December 19th date, but if the Election Commission decides to exhaust the time, that will not be possible. So the next date on the calendar is the January 2nd, 2018, or January 9th, 2018. Those are the three dates that we're anticipating the election to be held.
But the Elections Commission will have to make an announcement in terms of when the campaigning for this runoff election should begin.
I think the first priority of business is for them to clean up the voter roll that the Supreme Court and the ECOWAS delegation had recommended.
Given the situation on the ground, Rodney, assuming there will be a runoff, these two parties, the ruling Unity Party and the Coalition for Democratic Change of George Weah, does any of them have any momentum in case they announce the beginning of campaigning?
Well, the key issue in this campaign has been the issue of finance. all of the parties who contested the first round had problems raising money. And that is said to be repeating itself in the build-up to the runoff. Both sides are said to be struggling financially, and so momentum is kind of dampened. But I'm sure once the Election Commission announced the date, we should see some movement from the both sides, the Boyka camp and the George Weah camp.
Rodney, it's always nice to talk with you, and thank you very much for your analysis.
Thank you, James.
Rodney C. is the managing editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print news magazine. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December the 8th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Kenya's main opposition party, the National Super Alliance, known as NASA, says the swearing-in of former Prime Minister Raila Odinga next Tuesday would proceed as scheduled. This despite warnings from Kenya's Attorney General that the planned installation of the former Prime Minister is unconstitutional and that such move qualifies as treason. President Uhuru Kenyatta was recently sworn in for his second and final term after the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission declared him winner of the presidential election rerun. Raila Odinga pulled out of the rerun, saying it would not be credible. Philip Itali, spokesman for the Kenya opposition NASA, tells viewer Peter Clotty that the party would not be deterred from holding the planned installation of Raila Odinga, whom he described as the legitimately elected president of Kenya.
Well, from where I sit, I've not heard of any change of plan. The swearing-in is on a schedule on Tuesday next week, on the 12th of December, and that has not changed. And it will go on in spite of insinuations by some people in government, including the Attorney General, that it's reasonable to hold such an event. They believe the event can still go on as scheduled because it's the right of the people to have their preferred leader as the president of the Republic of Kenya.
Critics of NASA have said that this is a political gimmick calculated to put pressure on the government to have a coalition government in Kenya, and they reject that outright. What is your take on this assertion?
Nothing can be further from the truth. In any case, the people who would be so much interested in a grand coalition government are both in Jubilee, because they know pretty well that if you open the server of the August 8th general election, the ultimate winner of that election is none other than Raila Amolo Odinga. He won outrightly. He was denied his victory. And they know very well, if the truth will stand, then they'll be the ones on the losing end. So nothing of that sort. We are not even thinking about grand coalition government. And if there are any talks that can be held, then the two leaders, Raila Odinga and Uhuru Kenyatta, should go on the negotiating table as equal partners. And I repeat, as equals, and that is what is there.
Attorney General Githumo Igai has said this is high treason, and as enshrined in the Kenyan constitution, high treason attracts the death penalty. Will the NASA coalition risk the life of Raila Odinga, the former prime minister, in order to go ahead with this planned swearing in, and those associated with planning could be charged as well?
Just as Professor Githumo Igai is a lawyer and a scholar of law, so has NASA. People with such kind of intellectual capacity to interpret the law and be able to know what is good and what is wrong. So we know that our lawyers, the NASA lawyers, have also read the Constitution. Every lawyer interprets the law in a manner that suits their cause. So the Attorney General, Professor Githumo Igai, could be interpreting the law to suit the argument being advanced by the Jubilee government. So that one cannot stop NASA from carrying on with what they have planned. Every country has a law on treason, but we've never witnessed any country sentencing a leader on treasonable charges. So Kenya would be the first one if that will ever happen.
Philip Itali is the spokesman for Kenya's main opposition party, known as NASA. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. Mauritanian authorities have drafted a law that would require anyone found guilty of apostasy, the act of insulting or mocking God, the Quran, or the Prophet Muhammad, to receive a mandatory death penalty. As the law stands now, if a guilty party repents, their sentence can be converted into a prison term. Human Rights Watch's Deputy Director for the Middle East and North Africa, Eric Goldstein, talked to Ricky Stryak about a blogger currently still being held in prison for apostasy and why the proposed new law is a human rights issue.
Mauritania already has draconian laws in effect on crimes it defines as apostasy. And what this draft law would do would be narrow the mitigating circumstances by which a judge could impose less than the death penalty for this offense.
So, in other words, if someone was found guilty of this offense, they would automatically go to the death penalty. There would be no other option.
That's correct. Whereas right now, there's an option by which if the person repents of his supposed crime under certain circumstances, the penalty can be converted into a prison term, which we also consider unacceptable, but it's obviously better than getting the death penalty.
In a place like Mauritania that is deeply religious and where religion and politics are often intertwined, what is the risk of politicians using this law to silence their critics?
Well, I question your premise that Mauritania is deeply religious. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Maybe some people are deeply religious and others are less religious, like in any country. But what's clear is the government is using religion in a country that is ethnically heterogeneous, although everybody is at least nominally, if not deeply Muslim, to push a political agenda. And here they're using this law as a kind of sop to Islamists in the country.
That was Eric Goldstein, Human Rights Watch's Deputy Director for the Middle East and North Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Washington. A top United Nations official visiting South Sudan says any UN employee or official accused of engaging in sexual exploitation must be investigated and punished for their actions. The UN Assistant Secretary General's advocate for victims' rights says such behavior undermines the UN's integrity. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
One South Sudanese woman says when she applied for a job in one of the UN agencies operating in the country, her would-be boss demanded sex in exchange for the job. The woman, whom we will call Hadia to protect her privacy, says when she applied with one of the UN agencies, her employer demanded for a relationship in return for a job, an offer she declined. Hadia's voice has been purposely distorted to protect her identity.
This guy told me completely I have to be his girlfriend. I can never be somebody's. You know, I want to stand outside there at all and have to tell stories to my kids or to my future friends and any other person, because at the end of the day, I am going to do this for an exchange. And what's going to happen? For instance, there's a scenario of maybe I'm going to meet this person in future and I still have a flashback. So I'm having this job and this guy used me.
Hadia is calling on women everywhere in South Sudan to speak up against sexual abuse. She says apart from sexual exploitation, at times some UN employees in higher positions demand cash bribes in exchange for a job. She says because of the economic crisis, some women may just give into sexual exploitation because they are desperate.
This is happening, and especially now that we have an economic crisis.
Jane Connors, the UN Assistant Secretary General Victims' Rights Advocate, told reporters there are no statistics available on the number of cases of sexual exploitation linked to UN officials and employees in South Sudan. But Connors says she believes hundreds of women and men suffer in silence because they do not want to lose their jobs or because of the stigma attached to reporting sexual exploitation.
My view is this conduct is not inevitable. It is something that emerges out of imbalance in power relations. Those who engage in the conduct are in a position of power, and those who are subject to it are in a position of vulnerability.
Connor says although thousands of men and women who work with the United Nations uphold the values of the UN Charter and frequently work in situations of great personal risk, the acts of some individuals constitute a crime. Connor says the UN must put in place measures to hold the perpetrators accountable. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Our time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the news that Real Madrid star and Portuguese international Cristiano Ronaldo on Thursday capped his wonderful year with one of football's most prized awards as he became the winner of the Ballon d'Or award for an amazing fifth time. The Portuguese international has now caught up with his fierce rival Lionel Messi, who has also won the prestigious award on five occasions.
I feel happy. It's a great moment in my career. I'm glad this is something that I looking forward every year, every season. So I'm glad that last year we did amazing season. We win the Champions League.
Back here in Africa, the Confederation of African Football Disciplinary Committee has fined South Africa's SuperSport United $15,000 for pitch invasion. Also fined for the same offence is the new CAF Confederation's champion, TP Mazembe of Congo, who are expected to pay $5,000. Both finalists, TP Mazembe and South Africa's SuperSport United, are set to appear before CAF after their fans invaded the pitch in the second leg of the Confederation's Cup final played last weekend at the Lucas Moreira Stadium in South Africa. Staying with football news, the Egyptian Football Association have received a proposal to face Mexico in an international friendly in March as they prepare for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. The Pharaohs were drawn in Group A of the World Cup with hosts Russia, Uruguay and Saudi Arabia. Another World Cup-bound team, Nigeria, is set to play England in a World Cup warm-up game in June. And now to East Africa's biggest football competition, the CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup. Rwanda was knocked out of the competition with one game still to play in Group A against Tanzania on Saturday. In Group B, Burundi beat Ethiopia 4-1, while Zanzibar boosted their chances of qualifying to the semifinals when they rallied from a goal down to thump their main land rivals, Tanzania, 2-1. In today's fixtures, Uganda will lock horns with South Sudan in a Group B match at the Bukavu Stadium. In table tennis news, Nigeria table tennis player Aruna Quadri has set a new Nigerian record as he's ranked currently the best African ITTF player for the first time ever. The 29-year-old was ranked 21 in the latest ITTF ranking released on Thursday by the World Table Tennis ruling body. Aruna Quadri surpassed his best of 25th in the ranking to displace Egypt's Omar Asar as Africa's best-ranked player in the world.
It has not been very easy. I've been practicing and practicing really hard. It has not been very easy. So I think with the hard work, playing in more tournaments has been something behind my improvement in the ranking.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, December 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, I'm James Butte wishing you a good weekend.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.